From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Their breakthrough album put the question simply, how will the wolf survive? Now Los Lobos, Spanish for the wolf, famed for its music, is out with its 12th album. The reviews are rave. 3 decades after first coming together, the band's soulful, Latin-flavored rock roots music out of East L.A. is a proven survivor. We're talking tonight with Los Lobos. Thirty years ago, high school friends David Hidalgo, Luis Perez, Cesar Rosas, and Conrad Lozano came together to form the revolutionary Latin rock band Los Lobos. Saxophonist Steve Berlin joined a few years later. The group rode their brilliant cover of Ritchie Valens' La Bamba to international fame. And ever since, the five have been pumping out a big, brilliant stream of rock and roll, a rich, dynamic, quintessentially American sound. We didn't want to be typecast, says Cesar Rosas. We didn't want to slick back our hair and wear puffy sleeves, but they never forgot their East L.A. Chicano roots either. Los Lobos' new album is The Ride. It's part retrospective, part wild experiment, a restless mix of rock, blues, soul, Latin, and country, with remarkable guest performances from a big lineup of Los Lobos friends, Willie G., Elvis Costello, Bobby Womack, Ruben Blades, Tom Waits, and more. The result is a musical journey that only 30 years of experience could create, a great record by a great 3-time Grammy Award-winning American band. Joining me now from Los Angeles are David Hidalgo, Luis Perez, and Steve Berlin of Los Lobos. Welcome to all three of you. It's an honor to have you on. Thanks so much for joining On Point.
Thank you.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having us.
Hi. Hey, wonderful new album, just terrific, and what a lot of range here. Dave, what was the idea behind the album? You pulled together so many people and so many sounds.
It's our 30th anniversary we just celebrated. So
congratulations.
Thank you. And the idea was to try to thank our friends. Yeah, we need an angle.
and you
just
found
another Lobos record. You know, we need some with a story.
Well, so. It sounds like the best house party ever. I mean, what a lineup of people came to celebrate with you. It's a good angle that you found. Luis Perez, how did it actually all come together? This couldn't have been done over a couple of days in studios. There's just too many people involved here.
We first initiated the idea early last year. We went to the studio to cut some tracks in May. So it took a good part of the year. Of course, we took summer off so we can go tour. And so we did bits and pieces here and there, but in earnest, we started in September. So it took us a few months of everyday sort of work and organizing, guest artists. It came from all different directions. Some came to us. Some of them we went to them, and some we communicated by recording. Nice.
And you can send things back and forth these days and even work at long distance. For the one piece with Tom Waits, I understand, it was kind of patched together from all sorts of bits and pieces. Is that right, Steve?
Well, actually, the way that came about, there was Dave had written a song. It was a demo that we just kind of loved the sound of. And we thought Tom would like it, too, so we sent it off to him in just a CD off to him in Northern California where he lives. And he came back and said, I love it. But you know, I want to be part of it, but I, you know, this is how I want to do it. Cause the demo was done on a sort of mildly archaic, multi-track cassette format.
Yeah.
And Tom wanted to do it on his multi-track cassette format. So the technological hurdle was, marrying the two. So, Tom did his bit and sent it back to us, and we had to figure out how to play it on these things that don't really get made anymore, but it all worked out. It was a blast and is amazing just to have him part of the deal.
We want to hear a lot of your music tonight. You've got such great people on board with this album. We mentioned a bunch of them, but Ruben Blades and Mavis Staples and Bobby Womack and Richard Thompson, on and on. It's really terrific. Let's turn to a cut called Hurry Tomorrow. This was co-written, I understand, by Cesar Rosas and Grateful Dead lyricist Robert Hunter. Let's listen to a little bit of Hurry Tomorrow from Los Lobos' new album, The Ride.
Take your path. Can't hurry up tomorrow. Let it come. Hurry up tomorrow. I don't know where love's gone or where it still may go. I can see the raindrops roll down my bedroom window slow, like they're strumming the guitar of my soul. Hurry tomorrow. Hurry up.
David Algo, here you've got the Grateful Dead lyricist who pitched in Robert Hunter. I have to say, throughout this album, The Ride, I felt the fingerprints, the kind of an echo of the Grateful Dead. You opened for them, Los Lobos did, very often. Do you feel a kind of kinship with that group, with their career, with the way it evolved, with the way your long career altogether has evolved?
Well, when I was a kid, Live Dead came out in 69. I really liked that a lot. And I was always a fan of Jerry Garcia's playing. And when we, he came to see us, turns out he liked our band. That was, that was amazing.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and he'd come to the shows and hang out and play or not. It was just, but he would be there whenever he could. And, we struck up a friendship. And doing this record, we tried to touch on different aspects or different people or different styles of music that were important to us. And Jerry was a big part of, big influence on me, especially, I guess. And everyone, we grew up, they were always there,
Yeah, it comes through loud and clear. How often did you open for the Dead? Was that something you did again and again and again?
Not that much. I mean, it happened. There was a period of a couple of years where we played with them fairly regularly, but it wasn't...
About 12, 15 shows, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, a lot of fun, and the feeling is really dear.
Was it Jerry wasn't here to be on the album, so we figured, his partner would, we tried to touch on that. We try to get an essence of Jerry in there somehow,
Through Robert Hunter.
Through Robert, yeah.
Yeah, it's a terrific track and really works. Louis, let me put the question to you that was in your first big album title, How Will the Wolf Survive? How has Los Lobos survived all these years? What's the secret of your longevity?
Repeated applications of refried beans.
I think our creditors wouldn't have it in any other way. it amazes me too, the fact that we can be together for 30 years now, and for one thing, still be friends.
Yeah,
I think still to have the enthusiasm and the creative sort of curiosity still intact is a mystery to me. The fact that we were friends before we were a band together probably has a lot to do with that.
All the way back to high school days.
All the way back to high school. Because really, if you kind of strip all the way all the music and everything else, you just end up with a bunch of friends just hanging out. And that's how we started. And someday we'll all be kind of rocking on a porch somewhere and talk about all these times that we had on the road.
I mean, our cream of wheat.
Through a straw.
Right. Right. And Steve Berlin, you were the latecomer, but now you've been there for so many years as well. How's that?
He's a new guy.
Always and forever. Right. How's that melding worked, Steve? You, as I read, Rolling Stone's got this wonderful story about how you sat, where was it? In a concert, 25 years ago at the Olympic Auditorium in downtown L.A. and heard Los Lobos for the first time and were absolutely taken with it. How do you describe to friends, to your own family, the way you've been sewn into, organically absorbed by this group so marvelously over the years?
Well, actually, I haven't told them yet. They think I'm in medical school.
Right. Too late.
I guess I'm outed now, huh?
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing, like even from the very beginning, was there was a lot of shared, a lot of our touchstones were very similar. I mean, I grew up on the other side of the country from these guys. But
Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Philadelphia. But, you know, when we first got together, there was a lot of shared stuff. I mean, obviously, the cultural background wasn't there, but, you know, the same sort of primordial influences were around, you know, obscure British blues and pop and R&B and jazz and you know, a lot of that stuff sort of was part of all of us. And that was the most amazing part for me, that just that, you know, these guys from a completely different milieu could have, you know, the same sort of touchstones and the same important stuff affected them the same way it affected me.
Did you
and
feel
I think
it?
That was,
yeah. Did you feel it that very first night at the Olympic? Did you just make that quick connect and say, "Oh my God"?
No. The night at the Olympic was an interesting night in that it was the first California performance of Public Image Limited. I guess the Sex Pistols had bypassed L.A.
But it had their lead singer John Lydon.
Yeah. So this was that night. I remember just feeling it was a very dangerous vibe in the room, and these guys were out there playing Mexican folkloric music. So I don't think at that moment I thought, this is the band that I'm going to join.
Mexican folkloric
Oddly enough,
music
the second,
in front of band, a house full of punk rockers.
Yeah, it was kind of it was mildly tragic.
Oh, geez.
Roughly, you know,
as he was spitting on us, he was, he was saying, "Hey, these guys ain't bad."
Stop spitting and listen.
I'll save some ammo.
Right.
I think the performance where I think me and actually a lot of people in L.A. were sort of turned on to what Los Lobos was about was the one where they opened up for the Blasters, which was a band that I was in at the time.
Yeah.
And they opened up for the Blasters at the Whiskey. And by that point, the band was more or less much closer to what it is now, which mm-hmm. is, you know, sort of an amalgam of all these different influences. And that was probably the night. I wasn't like I thought, well, this wasn't like an epiphany, like I'm going to join this band. But myself, like everybody else in the room, was kind of blown away by just that there was this band from, you know, merely, you know, a couple thousand feet away from where everybody thought they were in touch with everything. And here this fully formed thing had sort of emerged and kind of blew everybody away. And I remember it was literally an overnight thing. Like the next day, all anybody talked about was Los Lobos. Everywhere. Everybody I talked to that was like, "Did you see him? Could you believe it? I mean, how did these guys get so good? No one ever heard of them before." And meanwhile, they were working their buns off. It was just sort of like this odd cultural wall that
they'd been in East LA doing a lot of work, and now suddenly they were out of those walls.
Yeah, exactly. It was a very interesting moment to be in retrospect that, you know, there was this very funny thing that this band, you know, had evolved completely and become something really remarkable and no one knew about until that night.
We're going to go into a break listening to Rita from Los Lobos' new album, The Ride. Luis Perez, tell us just a little bit about this cut. I love it. It's so blue and so beautiful. And who's Rita?
Rita is this little girl who lives in Tucson, Arizona. I kind of modeled the song about a young girl who just got married to another kid. And the idea of kind of just coming of age as young kids in this millennium. It's kind of a tough world out there.
Coming of age, pretty blue. Here's Rita from The Ride by Los Lobos. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
And Rita, I guess I think too much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're joined tonight by three of the five members of Los Lobos. Dave Hidalgo, Luis Perez, and Steve Berlin are with me from Los Angeles behind us right now from their new album, The Ride, Quítate. Let's listen just a little bit. Tom Waits is here. So is Martha Gonzalez with Los Lobos. I just love this. Dave Hidalgo, it sounds like music and sound and ambience snatched right out of the streets of East L.A. Have I got that right? Is that the impulse here?
The influence, where it came, the idea came from, where I stole the idea from, was I had this tape of a Cuban organ grinder. It was like a marine band organ, but it was one from Havana or something. And so it was playing Latin music with that same sort of carousel sort of thing. So that's where the idea came from. But we gave it to Tom, and he liked it, and he did what he did some things on it, and he sent it back to us, and then we worked on it a little bit, sent it to him again, and it was a nice surprise all the way through.
Tom Waits doing that kind of crazy thing here with a flavor I've never heard before. It's kind of a homage or send up of a, I don't know what, like somebody selling things in the street or just yelling out the window. Was it a laugh for you, Luis Perez, to hear Tom Waits doing his kind of Latino sound?
Yeah, well, Tom had said up front that he wanted to sing in Spanish. And what he came back with was this rant, quítate, through the whole thing. And then David and I got this idea, because quítate means, get out of here. So we came up with this thing where we would make this little movie where Martha comes home to find, Tom in the house with his headphones on, listening to CDs while the house is falling apart and the kids are still running around in their diapers and pajamas at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. She just came back from work.
Right.
So we spent this, kind of created this whole movie, and we had some great players come in here. The trombonist
Francisco Torres.
Yeah.
Came in and at like 2 a.m. We called him up and he said, "Well, why don't I come over now?"
Yeah.
And put down this incredible track, and I'm real happy with this one. It's a very adventurous and all those adjectives.
Yeah, a beautiful mash and all kinds of energy there. Just terrific to listen to.
Beautiful mess.
Mash. you name it, but it sure sounds great. There's so much we want to talk to you guys about tonight. I want to dive in. We'll have more music, but there's just some big topics we want to get to. And I guess the first is the music business and radio and Latin-flavored music and how you all see yourself in all of that these days. I've been looking at some interviews you've done recently with newspapers and magazines, and I'm reading a lot of frustration here about the path that Los Lobos found, what doors were open and what have not been easily opened to you all. Steve Berlin, you've been particularly vociferous on this. What's the word, Steve?
I would hate for our carping to sound like sour grapes, because I think we've been absolutely blessed and we're eternally gratified that we actually have a career playing what is, admittedly not the most commercially designed music. So I'd like to preface anything I say by saying that, believe me, I couldn't be happier with my career and how it's turned out.
And we've read that, and we hear it, and it's not so much sour grapes that I found fascinating here, but it's a kind of social critique in your view of what's going on in the music business.
The climate is so it's stacked against creativity and individuality on so many levels. Now, mind you, a lot of this stuff is changing now. And I think that certainly being able to broadcast your music across the internet makes a lot of the things that I'm railing against possible. But I think that there's a hegemony against, taking chances, really. And I think a lot of what the industry says are the problems that the industry would like to have people believe are the problems. I don't think are the problems at all. I don't think that downloading is the reason why people aren't buying CDs anymore. I think it's because they can't actually hear any music anymore. I mean, radio is completely and utterly gutless and soulless. Not this station, of course, but commercial radio is basically, we don't even factor it into our consideration anymore for the most part, just because there are all but a handful of stations that will actually take a chance and play something that they haven't been told to play or paid to play.
That is a pretty astounding statement if you think about it, that a group of your stature, Los Lobos, doesn't even take commercial radio into account. It's incredible.
Well, it's a sad state of affairs, and I don't think we're the only ones that feel that way. I just think it's sort of a diseased culture that I think is a problem for all of us, and I don't think it's necessarily just radio. I think it's, you know, a lot of mass media is inured against strong and original ideas. So I would love to actually be able to turn on a radio someplace, a commercial radio, and actually hear something compelling or something that's, you know, soulful or moving. And that, I think I've frankly stopped trying just because I don't anticipate it ever happening. It may happen again one day, but that's, I think, what the Internet's for. And that's what Internet radio, which I spend a lot of time listening to, is for. And I think that's where you have to go to find stuff. Certainly that's where I go to find stuff.
Dave Hidalgo, have there been moments in your long career where you just said, you know, we have got to try and get back on that pop rails and get some of that big La Bamba money here again? Or was the temptation never there?
There's a 7-Eleven down the street.
We were saying that on the way in today. I mean, the thoughts come, but yeah, we couldn't do it again. That was a, you know, that was just a moment in time. Everything worked out, you know, with the movie, and it just struck a nerve with a lot of people, and yeah, that can never happen again. And I'm glad we were smart enough at the time not to try to follow it. You know,
went to number one, 2 million copies of the soundtrack sold, maybe more by now. But we love the music that you're making right now. Let's hear some more of it. Here is a track off of Los Lobos' new album, The Ride. It's called Is This All There Is? Features the legendary Chicano vocalist Willie G, one of the brightest singing talents during the golden age of East L.A. rock and roll in the 1960s. Willie G and Los Lobos with Is This All There Is?
Come and hide to the mountain top, reaching up to the sky above, asking to myself, is this all there is? Sailing into the ocean blue, trying to find at least one clue on a paper scrawl. Is this all there is? And they
And Luis Perez, have you kept personally up with Willie G, the band, the group, over the years, or is he, you know, around the neighborhood? Is he part of your community still? What's the relationship?
I talked to him yesterday.
I talked to him yesterday too. He called me up.
He's a good friend.
That
was a call.
We got reacquainted with Willie when you know, David worked on this project with him a few years back.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we see him all the time. He does kind of live not too far away from David, but the history that we have with him and his music and his art it goes way back to when we were little kids. My sister would take me to the parking lot of the Johnson's Market on Whittier Boulevard to hear the Midnighters, you know, play on a stage made of a bunch of pallets kind of tied together. It was a really good time for music. The Midnighters kind of brought that kind of success home. They were like a you know, like with the Beatles were really, you know, big in the larger media sense. The Midnighters were like our Beatles back in East Los Angeles.
Do you guys still stay close to East L.A.? Is it home or somewhere that you're still rooted, or you all live on Malibu now?
No, we don't.
Yes and no.
Yes and no. Well, I mean, you know, it's a peculiar thing, isn't it? You know, you become somewhat successful, and you move away from the neighborhood.
Right, even if it's still driving you.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know exactly what that is. I guess, you know, you're just you're in my case, and I think I could speak for the rest of the guys here. You try to do what our parents did, was to create a better world, or at least an environment for raising your children. But it is still an incredible source of inspiration. Whenever I sit to write, I can't write about something I'm not familiar with. And I always dig into that rich place that is East L.A.
Let's hear another track.
We still get our cars fixed there, too.
good. You know the mechanic. Let's hear another track. This one is kind of a medley of your 1992 Wicked Rain off your album Kiko with the classic Across 110th Street. Here's Bobby Womack singing.
Wicked rain falling from the sky. Down, 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 pouring down upon the night. Where's that just one chance in a million that someday we'll make it out alive? Rain, 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 an evil rain falling all the time. Sun don't ever want to shine, yeah. Well, there'll be no light in the morning till some peace at last we find. Like traveling in the darkness, can't see our way. Trying hard to make it through another day. Father, 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 why don't you let your son go?
Brother, why must we go on this way?
There's a storm off in the distance,
and it looks like a tip to stay.
What a great sound and sounds to put together there. But I guess this kind of sound, Bobby Womack, great American soul singer, just one of the best. And as I listen, it seems like this has always somehow been part of the Los Lobos sound, Steve Berlin.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think when we first conceptualized the record, that's what we really wanted to say, was that these are the people and these are the voices and these are the musicians. The people that made us, here they are. I mean, we couldn't have done what we've done without them sort of, carrying us along the way. And certainly Bobby was a profound influence and remains a profound influence in the songwriting and, the social observation and just, the unbelievably brilliant musicality. That was an amazing day working with him and hanging out with him and one day out of many amazing days in the course of making this record, but that I left the studio that night just on cloud nine, basically.
Yeah, I can well imagine it. You mentioned social observation there, and a lot of this music has plenty of commentary woven through it, even while it's really thumping and driving and a lot of fun. There's been controversy over whether musicians should be making social observations in the last couple of years. Some have been sort of practically booed off stages. You all have been still pretty outspoken. Steve Berlin, I've read you saying that you think it's important for artists to speak up, not just even when times are confusing, tough, difficult, but especially then.
Absolutely. I think it's our responsibility. I mean, really, I think that's our job, is to reflect and interpret the way we feel things are. And I can't imagine a planet where artists are muzzled. What would the point be, frankly? I mean, I think we have to speak up and we have to report. Because, frankly, it's hard to get the news elsewhere, too.
You mean
gotta sound like
the rest of what's out there isn't saying what? Isn't telling what, Steve?
Well, I think just the reportage and the way events are reported, I think it's important that an artist's voice be thrown into the into the mix. I think there's certainly there's great effort being expended to spin news and spin events and spin cultural affairs, and I think it's an artist's job to spin it our way.
Do you feel artists doing that in the music that most Americans hear most of the time?
Not the music most Americans hear, but I think it sort of gets back to what I was saying before, is where I think it's the hegemony and the inability to find these things without trying really hard is the main problem. That I think that, no, certainly not in the mainstream. You know, you have your Toby Keith and all that stuff, right. You know, reporting their version, and I think it's incumbent on the rest of us to give our spin.
Well, there's a great spin and a probing one in this album. We're going to go into another break with a wonderful cut, Ya Se Va. This is featuring the great Panamanian musician, politician, Ruben Blades. Dave Hidalgo, tell us about this song. First of all, what's it mean, Ya Se Va?
She's gone, you know. Yeah, she left. Yeah. It's basically the chorus is... Ya se va. She's left. She's gone. She's gone laughing while I'm here. I sit here crying. And we sent him the track. It was Caesar had the basic idea, and we kind of worked it out, and we sent it to him, and he loved it. And Steve picked him up because he doesn't drive, and brought him down to the studio. And he had the whole thing worked out in his head. He had all the background parts. Everything. I mean, he did it within an hour. He did like 8 tracks of vocals and percussion and stuff. And it was just amazing.
It's just a fantastic track. Let's listen to some of it. This is Ya Se Va from the new Los Lobos album, The Ride. I'm joined tonight by Dave Hidalgo, Luis Perez, and Steve Berlin of Los Lobos. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Joined tonight by 3 members of Los Lobos. Here off the new album, The Ride, is Elvis Costello singing Matter of Time.
Speak softly, don't wake the baby. Come and hold. Just a matter of time.
Beautiful song. You guys really do get around Elvis Costello in your crew on this album as well. I'm joined tonight by Luis Perez, Steve Berlin, and Dave Hidalgo of Los Lobos. Luis, I think you wrote this for your 1984 album, How Will the Wolf Survive?
Yeah, that's right. David and I wrote this one of those, now rare occasions where we were able to sit down and, you know, with the guitar and pencil and paper, we kind of communicate more by tape now.
Yeah.
But, this was written in 84.
When you listen to it now, in this recording with Elvis Costello singing it, do you still feel the impulse that led you in the early 80s to write this? What was the impulse? What was moving you, and do you still feel it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And Elvis just brought back all those impulses and those memories and emotions all over, you know, back. The song originally, back in 84, David and I wrote it, was about an immigrant, about a man who's leaving his family to come across the border here to work in the U.S.
Yeah.
For Mexico.
Yeah.
And Elvis heard this song and he incorporated it into his acoustic shows he was doing during the 80s. And the song actually became for me that this is a really important song on this record because of the kind of historical sort of thing, you know, that it's talking about the plight of the immigrant, which mm-hmm. Still exists, and also where we kind of find ourselves in that same place by traveling around the country the way we do.
Yeah.
And leaving our families. And so when Elvis did this, it just stripped down just in with the piano, it just made it all that more poignant for me.
It's a beautiful rendition of a really great song from the pens of you and Dave Hidalgo. You know, it raises an issue that I wanted to ask you all about. We're going to get geopolitical here for a moment, or just political maybe, but in the current Foreign Policy magazine, there is an article by Samuel Huntington. He's the big Harvard professor who wrote this book, The Clash of Civilizations, some years ago, that phrase that now surrounds, you know, so much of what's going on in the world, the question of do we have a big clash with the Islamic world. Now he is writing about Mexican immigration. And in this distinguished journal, this distinguished professor says, many Mexican Americans simply do not appear to identify primarily with the United States. He goes on to say, this reality poses a fundamental question. Will the United States remain a country with a single national language in a core Anglo-Protestant culture? And you can kind of hear this in the way it's put here. But he raises this as a warning. Watch out about the future. This country may split up over immigration and an immigrant population. I just want to throw that out to you. What do you all make of that?
Too late. Yeah.
It reminds me of the in Britain, the National Front, there's the same thing where there's a, what's his name, Enoch Light, I believe his name.
The kind of nationalist, white...
Nationalist, right-wing gadfly tries to... same issue, same agenda.
Enoch I think Powell, it's just, yeah.
Enoch Powell, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Enoch Light, he's a composer. Yeah, Enoch Powell. You know, it's racism. And, that doesn't matter how many PhDs you have, it's racism.
Yeah, I guess.
And what is America? I mean, how did this country form? And who's to say it's done now?
I totally get it.
Is the experiment over?
But I want to dig in there a little bit further. It was, Louis, I think I heard you say there, it's too late. So has he got a kernel of truth here? Well, what's going on? Is it just time for the United States to reimagine itself? Is he upset about something that's history anyway, and that's okay? How do you see it?
Yeah, it's beyond reimagining. It's a reality, and that's what has to be dealt with. We would travel around the United States. You know, we've been on the road for 20 years, and we see the face of America changing. We would be in Burlington, Vermont, or somewhere in Minneapolis, or somewhere in the Midwest, or Boise, Idaho, and then there wouldn't be a Mexican if your life depended on it.
Yeah.
But now we see Mexican Americans everywhere, and I'm just talking about Mexican Americans. As far as Latin Americans from Central America and South America, mm-hmm. are showing great numbers in major metropolises. But Mexican Americans, I mean, you're finding them everywhere.
So how do you think that's going to change this country, or how has it changed this country? Is he right that Mexican Americans don't identify primarily with the United States?
No,
unicide. Because he doesn't watch the news and see the kids that are dying in Iraq. You know, I mean, there's a lot of Spanish surnames in there.
Sure,
you know,
are.
I mean. A lot of different people. I mean, it's everyone, if we didn't feel like we're Americans, what would we be over there? You know, I mean.
And I'm not sure if the version of America that he's talking about really ever existed. I think what's happening is that the lens is getting a little bit more in focus, and you're seeing that there's more to America than perhaps what he might have perceived. In case he hasn't noticed, it's a global village that we're living in, and it's not just America anymore. I mean, things that happen in places that we never even could think of or spell all of a sudden are instantly in our laps and in our faces and affecting the way we live.
In this album, The Ride, and in our conversation tonight, there's a number of points at which you're all fairly critical of some directions in which the culture has gone, the music has gone, the politics have gone. What do you think the impact of Mexican Americans will be on this country's culture, its politics?
Straight down the toilet. Louis, you take it, Louis.
Well, you know, we just by, you know, shared, you know, demographics, you know, we're talking about, you know, upwards to, you know, 40 million Latins, and by the, you know, census of last year, you know, we Latin Americans outnumber you know, blacks, African Americans as of last year.
But how's it going to change, or how has it changed the country?
The food's going to be a lot spicier.
Yeah, you can count on that.
Culturally, I think that this is still to be seen, because here we have this what happened a few years back with what they called the Latin wave in music, which. Yeah. You know, I can't tell you how many times I fielded that question from journalists asking, how has this Latin wave affected your career? And I said, it hasn't at all.
Washed
are
right
you kidding?
Over, thank you.
I said, yeah, I'm sorry, it hasn't affected us at all, because unfortunately what that does is it creates this kind of new standard. And suddenly, you know, people define Latin music as you know, Congas and Ricky Martin.
Yeah.
That's not what it is. It sends us back a few steps, but you know, we're just going to keep pushing forward.
Yeah.
And let people know what exactly, you know, Latin music is. I think that's a responsibility as Los Lobos to always you know, try to redefine a lot of the stereotypes and myths that people have about our culture.
And that
one more thing,
yeah.
I'd like
Steve,
to add is
Steve Berlin.
Is, you know, the one thing that I sense from not necessarily your questions, but in this discussion is, mm-hmm. and I think it's also tragic, is that there's as much complexity in Latin culture, if not more so, than what you might define as American culture.
Of
I mean,
course,
that
of course.
Even exists. And I think that it's, I always have a problem when it's spoken of as this one thing, of there's this one, you know, sort of primary color of either Mexican culture or Latin culture that
Amen.
Is
mm-hmm.
defined as in opposition to something else, where the reality, I think, is, there's this unbelievably complex and unbelievably deep and as varied as anything that you could say about America. The same thing is true about Latin culture, and I think it's I think that needs to be factored into the discussion as well. It's not, you know, black versus white, or, you know, Iraqi versus you know, a coalition. It's a much more varied varied thing.
Absolutely.
Yes, what we can actually benefit from each other. Maybe it's a redefinition of beauty, you know, of music, of art, and how those things kind of affect our lives.
Amen. Let's raise a glass to that musically with another cut off The Ride. This is Someday with Mavis Staple.
Someday, yeah, I will go home.
Mavis Staples with that great voice with Los Lobos on their new album, The Ride. This song from a 1990s album of yours, The Neighborhood, Louis.
It's 1990, I think.
Was it 1990?
1991. 90 or 91.
What a great song. And to reach out and say, Mavis, how about it? Was she eager to come on?
Yeah, it was another magical moment. The funny thing was that we had a couple other ideas for her along the way. We changed songs on her, I think, twice or... And each time she'd be like, oh, but I love that other song. And then, you know, we pitch something else. You know, oh, I like this one too. And
right.
Then, you know, this one obviously was well. I think they all would have been great because she could basically sing anything and make it sound good. But she was quite a sport to put up with us changing our minds on her all the time.
It just sounds great. There's such a wonderful range of sounds and people on this album, but that big Los Lobos sound with the wonderful percussion that always sticks in my mind. Yeah, I'm reading here from the Modesto Bee of just a month or two ago about a concert that you all were doing at the Modesto State Theater of real traditional folkloric Latin American music. How big does that remain in your, I don't know, in your concerts, in your private relationship with music, Dave?
Well, we hadn't. It's still part. It's a big part of what we do. We still draw from that well, and that's where we come from, basically, along with everything else. But we hadn't done an acoustic tour in quite a while, so we did this eight shows throughout California, just to play the acoustic music again. You know, there was an interest there for us to do it, and. And, you know, it forced us, you know, to get the stuff out and practice and, you know, try to
deal with guitars out of tune and broken strings and everything else that comes along with folkloric instruments.
There's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to hide with those folk instruments. You have to really play. And so it was challenging, but it was a lot of fun. Too.
It sounds like they quote you here saying it keeps you humble when the guitar strings go boing, boing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great thing. It's just been terrific having you all tonight, and what a wonderful new album. We're going to go out with Chains of Love. Steve Berlin, tell us about the song.
I guess the uncredited conspirator on this one is Don and Dewey, Don Sugarcane Harris.
And, blues violinist.
Blues violinist. You know, big influence on us, and... you know, it's just kind of a simple little, you know, goodbye. I think it sort of closes the record in an interesting way, and get to hear Dave whip out the violin a little bit, which is always a lot of fun for us.
Yeah, it's a great song.
I don't know. It was probably the simplest. I don't know. Sort of just came together in a really nice, easy way.
Big influence, Don and Dewey on the East LA sound years ago, and a big influence still today. Steve Berlin, Louis Perez, David Algo of Los Lobos, it's just been terrific having you tonight. The new album, The Ride, is wonderful, and I wish you a lot of success with it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Un placer. Gracias.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
We're funded by you.